with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know what? I love you guys.
I love you, man.
Just got a note on my wall from our pal Faith. She says, "Hoo-wee! I finally got to the podcast from March the 20th, and that 11-year-old was just awful. He reminded me of that cheesy movie from the 50s where there were a couple of lippy kids who were turning into Nazis, one complete with uniform and talking back to parents and stuff. Yeah, it's about the size of it. Indeed it is. But see, this is wonderful for me because it helps me remember what happened when. Because, you know, after a few years of this stuff begins to run together. I mean, I've got a pretty fabulous dadgum memory, but come on, please. Now, where to start this evening? I know where to start this evening. Hey, Guy James! Welcome back, brother! Glad to have you back aboard. Man, we missed you. It was so good to hear Guy letting his liberal flag fly, giving him hell. Ah, it was good. We got some tech tweaking we got to do yet. But you know what? If we were down to two tin cans and a string, if Guy James was screaming into one of those tin cans, we'd be the better for it. That's where we start. Welcome back, Guy James. Pleased to have you back in the fight, and glad to know that Bess is feeling good enough for you to be able to be back in the fight. So that's a more than appropriate place to start as far as I am concerned. And, let's see, a quick update for you. I just wanted to let you know, we talked yesterday, just, you know, keeping up with the news from, you know, Mr. Bob's Neighborhood. We talked about the two blowouts that happened, coal mine blowouts in the fairly recent past. And I told you about the one down in East Bank, West Virginia. Well, a little more developed out of that story today. And there's other stuff to do this evening, and don't think I don't know it. But I'm sorry, this is home, and this is the sort of very, very sharply defined reality that I live in, and I like to share it with you because this kind of stuff just goes to show what a gang of thugs we're dealing with here. You know, I shared that story with you yesterday where the guy who works for the Division of Highways, his name was Johnny Walker, remember? Yeah. But anyway, so the mine blew out and pumped out gallons and thousands of gallons of filth, buried a roadway, just about destroyed a retaining wall, and all of it was aimed, if it had kept going, all of it was aimed as if there was a bullseye on the building. All of it was aimed at East Bank Middle School. Yeah, really. At East Bank Middle School. That was just a mountain blowout. Just a mountain blowout. Just a few thousand gallons of toxic goo bearing down on East Bank Middle School. That was a dice roll that East Bank Middle School survived. Imagine then, if you will, how the dice are rolled every day at Marsh Fork Elementary. Every day children enter that grade school is a roll of the dice. Every day is a day that maybe the children who go to school there, it may be their last. And one of these days, because we have not a proactive, but a no-active governor, and a no-active school board, and a no-active legislature, a no-active House of Delegates, and a no-active Senate, one of these days, despite the words of Albert Einstein to the effect that I do not believe God plays dice with the universe, one of these days the dice will be rolled one more time, and they will come up snake eyes for that sludge dam that holds back 2 or 3 billion gallons, not thousands, billions of gallons of toxic goo hanging over the head of the students at Marsh Fork Elementary. See, if we lived in a culture that dealt with things like irony or karma or fateful warnings, what happened in East Bank would have everybody scrambling to get the kids at Marsh Fork Elementary out of the way of the hell and damnation that hangs over their heads. But we do not live in such a world. And whom the gods would curse, they first drive mad. And by the way, in sharing with you the story, of the mine blowout in East Bank, you know, we went over all the details, all about how it was a dormant mine that hadn't been worked for 40 years, in dormant like a volcano. No mention of any mountain removal going on around. Nope. Not a peep. Hear the crickets? I got to admit, I was caught napping. There was no mention of mountain removal going on around there, and I should have known better. But it took a dedicated photojournalist by the name of Antrim Caskey to go to East Bank and interview people who live there and to find out that indeed, up on top of what is called Kohlberg Mountain is a great big honking, you guessed it, mountain removal operation. Chercher l'argent, huh? But of course we can't mention the mountain removal operation, because that mountain removal operation probably has something to do with the blowout. Dynamite, blasting, or the fact that there's no trees and topsoil on top of the mountain to stop any water anymore. Yeah, that canard has been hauled out. Oh, yeah, you know, it just rained so much. A lot of rain. Really? There's always a lot of rain in Appalachia. I hate to tell the coal industry or anything. They got some geologists that they pay very highly, but maybe they missed that day in class. Appalachia is a temperate rain forest. Yes, it is. It really, really is. Oh, we had so much rain. We never expected any rain. Yeah, blame the rain. Don't blame the mountain removal operation. Don't blame the negligent mining corporation that is the successor in interest, as the saying goes, for that abandoned, what was the word again? Dormant mine. Sleeping. It's only sleeping. It did, you know, the mind got a little tired and went to take a nap. It's dormant. But no, Antrim Caskey found out that, yeah, there's a mountain removal job hanging over the heads of the kids at East Bank Middle School. Thank God we have a pro-life governor in West Virginia. Because I don't know what it would look like if he wasn't pro-life. I mean, he might be down there at East Bank or Marsh Fork just eating babies or something. But he's pro-life, so it's okay if billions of gallons of toxic sludge and mountain removal operations and blasting and dormant mines sit hard by children simply trying to learn. Oh, well, no biggie. Forget about it. It's Chinatown. So that's just a little update on, you know, Mr. Bob's Neighborhood. But you know what? I think we'll wander over to the Carl's Jr. Because I don't know about you, but welcome to the Carl's Jr. I'd like a big stupid supersize, please, with a side order of idiot. Coming right up.
Well, Lord Monckton, talk to me about this debate on are we a carbon-starved planet?
Well, Will Happer testified, he's from Princeton, testified in front of the Senate committee with Dr. Pachauri on this recently, and Will Happer's view that, yes, we are carbon-starved. If we go back to the Cambrian era, 7,000 parts per million compared with less than 400 parts per million today. Go back to the Triassic era, 175 million years ago, at the time when the aragonite corals, the most fragile of all the corals, came into being by algal symbiosis for the first time. Again, around 6,500 to 7,000 parts per million of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is a plant food. It's necessary.
Say that again. Carbon dioxide is what?
It's plant food.
It's plant food.
Yeah. Without it, all plant life...
No, he said plant.
All life that depends
so
on
if we decrease the use of carbon dioxide, are we not taking away plant food from the atmosphere?
Yes, indeed you are. The U.S. Forest Service has very good figures showing the enormous growth in the cubic yard.
So all our good intentions could be for vain. In fact, we could be doing just the opposite of what the people who want to save the world are saying.
You could indeed. You're quite right.
And I would just finish with this comment is, the earth will not be destroyed by a flood. And I yield back my time.
That's Illinois Representative John Shimkus. Not the one talking like this, saying a carbon-starved planet. No. The guy who's talking like that, that's Illinois Representative John Shimkus. In case you were wondering, he's a Repiglick and from the state of, oddly enough, Illinois. And I don't know, I feel pretty full of stupid right now. That was a whole lot of stupid to swallow in one bite. But I think I got a little bit, I got room for a little bit more stupid. We can always nibble on that side order of idiot along the way. This is from March 25th, 2009, it is, of course, our buddy John Shimkus again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The right of free speech is a great right that we have in this country. Very few times we use it to espouse our theological or religious beliefs, but we do.
Are we going to pray? Is it time to stand up and say the pledge? No. Just be patient. Now, don't rush anybody. Don't rush. There is plenty of stupid here to go around for everyone.
We have members of the clergy here as members of the panel. So I want to start with Genesis 8, verse 21 and 22. Never.
Now, that's where I always like to go when it comes to talking about stupid and climate change and stuff. I'm always game for going to Genesis. I mean, if you want to talk about the science of how the world got to be here and got to be the world and whatnot, screw the science textbooks. Let's go find out what a bunch of people who couldn't figure out the wheelbarrow thought about how they got there. Here we go.
again will I curse the ground because of man, even though every inclination of his heart is evil from childhood, and never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done.
Doesn't that mean that Mr. Shimkus is espousing a worldview that says he himself is evil? Just checking. Now, I'm going to be gone tomorrow and Thursday, so if we get a little bit of flavor of prayer meeting in tonight, you'll just have to bear with me a little bit. But this really isn't, well, kind of, but no, no, this is about, yeah, this is about a belly full of stupid with a side of idiot. It really is.
As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. I believe that's the infallible word of God. And
okay, let's take you at your face value there, the Representative Shimkus. As long as the earth endures, that's what I think we would call logically a condition precedent. Isn't it? Yeah. So, and that's the infallible word of God. Never mind the fact that, well, you know, we know how the books were written. The people whose books they are acknowledge how they were written. But for John Shimkus, it's the infallible word of God.
And that's the way it's going to be for his creation.
Hallelujah. Somebody hand me a snake.
The second verse comes from Matthew 24. And he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather.
Not no trombone neither, nor saxophone. It's going to be a trumpet.
Gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. The earth will end.
Four winds. Really? What did I say? Yeah, primitive peoples. Four winds. I mean, nor'easters, and there's the clipper, and the trade winds, and the Santa Anas, and the El Ninos, and the La Ninas, and all kinds of. But, you know, in the days of the book of Matthew, they wasn't but four. John, Paul, George, and Ringo. Four winds. That's all.
And only when God declares it's time to be over. Man will not destroy this earth. This earth will not be destroyed by a flood.
See, that's the problem with dumbasses like this. They don't think man will destroy the earth, but they are certainly willing to let him try. Because that's what this boils down to. You should have seen this Lord Fluffentarp that I had in the first clip. That guy reminded me of nothing so much as a Monty Python clip that was sent me over the weekend. A precious, precious bit of Monty Python. What of it isn't? But better than most. And that was the, and some of you may be familiar with it, the upper-class twit of the year. That guy was that.
And I appreciate having panelists here who are men of faith, and we can get into the theological discourse of that position. But I do believe God's word is infallible, unchanging, perfect. Two other issues, Mr. Chairman.
There's that believing again. He's doing it. Hey, Mom, he's doing that believing again. That means he ain't thinking no more. But you thought what we had so far was loopy. And by the way, we had a Monty Python clip on the program last night. But, you know, when you're talking about wingnuts, if the shoe fits, you know. But here comes the fun part. Because Lord Haw Haw, or whoever it was, has explained that there was a lot more carbon dioxide during the age of the dinosaurs. Remember? Just remind it.
I think in the age of the dinosaurs where we had most flora and fauna, we were probably at 4,000 parts per million. There is a theological debate that this is a carbon-starved planet.
A theological debate that this is a carbon-starved planet. Yeah, he said it. He really, really said that there's a theological debate that this is a carbon-starved planet. Okay. I'll grant him his theological debate and see him a scientific debate. You see, when the captain comes over the loudspeaker and tells you that the unsinkable Titanic has just struck an iceberg and is in fact sinking, you really don't want somebody in charge who can tell, who's, this is the time for a theological debate on how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, because what you really want to know right then and there is how many human beings can fit in a lifeboat. But I'm crazy, right? So, carbon-starved planet, theological debate, just to pick up where we left off.
Not too much carbon. And the cost of a cap and trade on the poor is now...
Oh, wait, he's a Republican, and suddenly he's worried about the poor. The poor corporations, mind you.
...being discovered. These miners lost their jobs through the last... And, Mr. Chairman, we talked about this job loss. I've got an IDNR report, Illinois Department of Natural Resources, that points to four mines that were closed specifically because of the Clean Air Act amendments in 1990. I'm going to share those with you.
Damn them!
Later, because we did have that discussion, and I do appreciate that. Appreciate the hearing, and I look forward to the questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
He forgot to say God bless America. I mean, he just did. And he didn't do the Pledge of Allegiance, nor stand up, or put his hand over his heart. You know, he might be one of those heretics that thinks that he flies into the clouds without his clothes on. That means he's clearly insane. But I give you John Shimkus, Repiglican from Illinois, idiot extraordinaire, beyond any shadow of a doubt.
Good afternoon and welcome to Hurlingham Park. You join us just as the competitors are running out onto the field on this lovely winter's afternoon here with the going firm underfoot and very little sign of rain. Well, it certainly looks as though we're in for a splendid afternoon sport in this, the 127th Upper Class Twit of the Year show. Now, the competitors will be off any moment, so let me just identify them for you. Vivian Smith-Smythe-Smith has O-level in kennel hygiene. Simon Zink Trumpet Harris, married to a very attractive table lamp. Nigel Incubator Jones, his best friend is a tree, and in his spare time he's a stockbroker. Gervaise Brooke Hamster is in the guards, and his father uses him as a waste paper basket. And finally, Oliver St. John Mollusk, Harrow and the guards, thought by many to be this year's outstanding twit. Now they're moving up to the starting line. There's a jolly good crowd here today. Are there understarters' orders? They're off!
Yes, right. I do believe we're living on a carbon-starved planet. Clearly, the carbon that it was 4,000 parts per million in the age of the dinosaurs, and there were all kinds of... Dear Jesus. We're not dinosaurs! It's a different world! Almost literally. Different dirt and every different mountains, different continents, different rivers. And that fundamentalist freak Shimkus, well, then again, the reason he believes that there was the 4,000, wants to believe the 4,000 parts per million, you know, carbon in the atmosphere during the dinosaurs is because he thinks the dinosaurs only left 10,000 years ago. And that you can go from 4,000 parts per million down to something reasonably accessible for human life in the course of, you know, a few generations. Man, I mean, there is idiots and there are stupid and then there is right-wing fundamentalist Repig Lickens. And I would suggest to you, my brothers, my sisters, my friends, my neighbors, I would suggest to you that Representative John Shimkus has done gone pro. Hey, welcome to the program.
Boy, oh boy, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert.
Oh, my goodness. It's really flowing today, isn't it? It really is flowing.
Yeah. Yeah. The sea refuses no river. Remember last night's lesson.
Seriously, it's. I mean, you know, there's a lot of different things you can get into, and the problem I think the problem that I have with the whole carbon issue is it brings. Is idiots start to think there's a chink in the armor, and then when, you know, so they'll attack on that aspect of it and so forth, and, you know, that while just completely, you know, negating the fundamental root cause of it, or the actual root here, you know, they talk in temperature, and I don't, as I said, I don't really fit into that temperature mode, because I think acidifying the oceans is far more devastating, and especially to, you know, to my children, who will never get to enjoy, you know, crustaceans coming out of the ocean. Which crustaceans, just like insects here on the planet, you know, insects are kind of like the little nanobots that go around and make sure everything gets decomposed and gets cleaned up.
Yeah, they do kind of, you know. It's kind of an ugly business, but they're pretty successful at it.
Exactly, and they do the same thing in the ocean. They keep it healthy. They keep it, you know, they're like the microbiology. You know, biological life that, you know, decomposes things. They're very, fungi is one of the most important aspects of a food, you know, so it's like, you know, you don't want to mess with the top of a food chain or the bottom of a food chain or really anywhere in between.
Yeah, exactly. You know, when I found out from the scientific report, and, you know, this is important work, but I'm sure that, Piyush Jindal could make fun of it somehow or another. Mm-hmm. When I found out that, for instance, at the base of a mountaintop mountain removal operation, that mayflies no longer hatch. See, that meant something to me, Albert.
Yeah.
Because there's lots of things that feed on the mayflies, and the things that feed on the mayflies get fed on by something else, and then not too far up the chain is us.
Yeah. And not for nothing. I mean, that's exactly it. I mean. I actually, you know, I do live in one of those, I feel a kinship to the land you live in and the land I live in, because they're both very ancient. They both really, their biggest natural asset, besides, you know, we have copper over here, but we have them, they're capped, they haven't mined them. But really is the natural beauty. I mean, we have world-class trout streams here. And if we had, let's say, copper effluents flowing into our streams and mayflies couldn't, you know, reproduce because it was blocking an enzyme, and, you know, we wouldn't have world-class trout streams anymore. And, you know, it's like one of these things of, I mean, it's just a micro-macro of the bigger picture. You know, if it's not happening, if it starts to kill everything upstream, what the hell is going to happen downstream? Is it bad enough we have dead zones in the ocean? Dead zones in the ocean.
Or that virtually every species of fish that's ever been identified as being edible, Albert, has been overfished. You know, there were not to interrupt, but that's, I mean, we're used to it now. This is how our conversations work, right? You remind me of something. Talking about dead zones and fish and mollusks. You mentioned mollusks and crustaceans. There have been archaeological studies, and you know, I'm just a total geek for archaeology. Of early peoples on the Pacific coast. And what you find, because they weren't particular in some of their living conditions, they would eat, they fed primarily, I guess, because they hadn't really worked out the whole fishing technology thing yet. And when you think about it, fishing is fairly high tech on the, it really is, I'm not kidding. They foraged the local mollusks. Because mollusks really can't run very fast. You know, slow food for slow people, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And what you find out is that they ate the yummiest mollusks first. Close to the shoreline, been there a while, big, meaty, yummy.
Buttery.
Yeah. And when they ran out, they had to walk a little further out into the sea. And they found another species of mollusk that was smaller, not as enticing, not as buttery, and you had to work harder to get them, and you had to get more of them. And so they're the next upmost layer in the midden, the shell midden. And then they run out. And the next higher level of the midden is a species of mollusk that you got to go even further out into the ocean to get. And they're even smaller. And less tasty. And they're that level of the midden. And it goes on like that until there aren't any more, you know, you run out of midden. Because you get to the end of the mollusk chain. And at the same time, you know what else you run out of, Albert? Human remains.
Interesting.
Because they literally ate themselves out of house and home.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's... Well, you'd find the same thing if you had a little beaker with, you know, sugar and water and some bacteria in it. The bacteria would eat it and eat it and eat it until they either toxified their, you know, the little beaker or ran out of food.
Well, we know how beer brewing works now, don't we?
Exactly. And, you know, this is why I say, you know, I've said it, you know, years ago, and you and I have talked about this, you know, on end, and it is important to get out into the universe, is we do not want to go the way of something that can't change its path. You know, you know, when we sit here and talk, you know, they talk CO2. I don't like them talking about CO2 because it's not the whole issue. You know, let's talk about mercury. Let's talk about sulfur dioxide. Let's talk about, I mean, there's a whole host of pollutants out there. I mean, you know, there was 800 parts per million of CO2 in the atmosphere. Yeah, how much Scotchgard was in the atmosphere back in those days? How much of that PTFC and PCBs and all these other crazy chemicals, how many of those were in the atmosphere?
Oh, those were just bubbling up right out of it because, you know, it was all volcanoes all around the dinosaurs and stuff. It's swamps and volcanoes, that's all it was.
Yeah, God's perfect breath mints or something along those lines. And, you know, and that's really, you know, that's the Achilles on these people. You know, you can't talk carbon because you talk, you know, well, God created carbon and all this other stuff. And, you know, they just get trapped back, you know, into the corner of their little padded room again, you know. Yep. And it just, you know, it becomes this stupid circle jerk. I mean, you sit there and you listen to talk about more idiots, and just to kind of stray off into the left wing, I guess, again. Did you hear what the Newt's plan is for dealing with the drug problem in this country?
No, I only heard that he had to convert to Roman Catholicism before he could run for president.
That
one still just got my, you know, my brain just hurts.
I think it was him and the Hannity were talking about how he should implement what Singapore does.
He wants to cane people?
Oh, he wants to drug test everyone. He wants to give hair follicle analysis, and then when they're found guilty, send them to rehab and kill and hang the drug dealers and all that, and that would fix the problem.
Can we do while we're doing the hair sampling, can we do some mercury analysis too, so we can have a plea of Your Honor, I was crazy, I was madder than a hatter, and that's why I smoked the demon weed?
I mean, for real. The thing is, though, that is beautiful about it, is when every time that they default to shorting out on their totalitarian, you know, tough guy, controlling mindset, you know, it really does expose them for what they are. You know, I mean, the Newt and these guys and the Hannitys, they're the guys that love what Saddam Hussein used to do. Remember back in the 80s, I was just watching one of these, they have these like little time capsule shows where basically this is all the news of the year of 1983, and this is all the new, you know, 84, and, you know, and they would go back in time, and man you never heard, they loved what he was doing. Oh yeah, oh, gas and children, oh, that's fine. Oh, but he's keeping that under control, and boy, look at all the people he gets out to vote for him. Oh, you know, he's doing good. That's the kinds of things that they would say. Now they talk, you know, in terms of this drug issue, which, you know, honestly, you know, this whole issue is bubbling up now, and it's important to bubble up because it does touch so many other issues. You want to start, hey, cap and trade, this and this and that. Man, if we grew hemp, we would suck in so much CO2. You know, granted, not as many as some of the more of plants that even suck in more, but they don't grow everywhere, and they don't happen, you know, there are plants that utilize carbon even more efficiently. However, they're not as an abundance, you know. So that would be one way, wouldn't it? Boy, I would clean up the soil, wouldn't it? You know, there's so many different avenues to go. And I love the drug issue because it exposes their utter hypocrisy constantly. Instead of realizing the mistakes of the past, they don't. They want to ramp it up. They don't realize that, you know, prohibition period doesn't work. Period. It just does not suit. You cannot do it like that. You can't sit there and try to contain a hand grenade by putting your hands around it. You don't do these kinds of things. You know, it doesn't matter. The tighter the box, the more explosive force is going to be put on the sides, and it's going to blow it to pieces. That's why those buildings in Stalingrad stood, no matter how many bombs the Nazis dropped on them, is because they were open and they had avenues of, you know, they had paths of least resistance for the explosions to travel out of without blowing apart the walls, and hence then you saw what happened in Stalingrad. And the Germans' mighty dreams of crushing the Russian Empire was lost to simple little physics like that. You know, and it's the same thing when you talk about drugs and you talk about crime and you talk about controlling people and then destroying the environment. It's always these little simple things that I hope expose these guys to utter total defeat. I mean, it doesn't ever end with them. Ned's over here talking about CO2 being plant food. Not quite. But at the same time, why is it a good idea? See, that's the thing. They'll always say, because that's how it was, you know, 10 million years ago or 6,000 years ago. But they never even actually say why it's a good idea to continue to pollute the environment. You know, that's why I love to get away from the whole, say what you want about Al Gore, but there are skeletons in that man's closet that, you know, could choke a graveyard. Okay? Don't need to get into all of them, but, you know, the thing is I hate it when we get poster children like we have. And they're so easy to be exposed by these right-wing freaks. See, because then it's almost like we take damage, which is, you know, maybe superficial or what have you, but we take damage due to the scar tissue that builds up on us, and that tears easy, and next thing you know, the entire situation is just out of control. And we're sitting here losing an argument about fundamentally saving and preserving our spaceship to idiots who don't even think that we should have a future. You know, and it's all in God's hands, right? It's always in God's hands. Always. Oh, yeah, it's God. God did it. God said it. God did it. Said it.
Yeah, but where Republicans are concerned, Albert, the reason it's always in God's hands is because God seems to be beyond the reach of service of process.
Hmm.
He's awfully hard to sue, in other words. I mean, that's why mountainside blowouts are concerned. I mean, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse or anything, but, it didn't take, I don't think, 2 days, before it was either in the Kentucky blowout or the West Virginia blowout. I can't remember which, just want to be honest. Somebody started saying, well, you know, there was an awful lot of rain. I had a lot of rain. Really? You had 10,000 gallons of rain per minute? Really? I mean, I want a little rubber raft and a rubber ducky and stuff and a little set of oars to row away in, but you know, that'd be some rain almost worth seeing, that 10,000 gallons a minute rain.
Oh yeah, but the thing is,
localized, mind you, not 10,000 gallons a minute over, you know, 900 square miles.
No,
10,000 gallons a minute in one creek.
All right, yeah. Well, why are they shocked by this? They're obviously just saying, it's like a really shoddy cover-up job. And it's like, oh, I didn't know that would happen. I didn't know that would happen. Well, how many times can you not know something's going to happen? You know, I don't understand, like, you know. It's like playing Russian. We didn't know that the gun would go off. You're playing Russian roulette with six bullets in the gun. You didn't know it was going to go off. You know, that's what I mean. Like I don't understand how people like us can even try to attempt, other than the fact that it's so breathtaking, but I don't know how we can even attempt to excuse this stupidity. This kind of stuff should be just laughed at throughout the halls of life. It's just ridiculous, this kind of stuff that these guys say. They have nothing. They have absolutely nothing. You know, it's like I don't know if you've seen that video. There's a video just popped on, I guess some wife thought her husband was cheating on him, so she put this video in, and sure enough, he was cheating on her with his ex-wife, and she comes walking in, she's all crying and freaked out, and, you know, he's standing there, and the other woman's standing there, and they're naked, and all that other stuff, doing the things, and he starts, well, if you would do this for me, blah, 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 like, wait, what? How are you going to sit here and try to blame your wife for what you're doing? And it's the same little mindset, you know. I don't know how you can sit here and try to rationalize these things. You know, if you destroy an environment and then, you know, put up a couple of layers of sod on it, you know, sweeping up all the crap under the sod and then thinking that that's going to fix everything without taking into account the natural geography and how the water is going to go and all the other things. You know, if you don't take this kind of stuff into account, how the hell are you going to? Gross. Just horrible. Just hideous. Just sad. And I really do, you know, I don't know what Obama's doing. Who's that guy he put in just recently? Oh, I just have brain fart in here. Well, he just put somebody in just really real scuzzy. They're talking about it in the chat rooms, Tony Dungy he's going to put up. Is that what he's doing? Mr. Right Wing, you know, snowflake babies and everything else.
Jesus won the Super Bowl for me, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so, you know, I sometimes I really don't understand what he's doing. I don't think he's listening to us anymore. In terms of, I don't know, I just don't feel like it. It feels like he's not listening, and he needs to start listening to us.
Well, that's part of why I'm not going to be on the air tomorrow and Thursday.
All right, well.
We're gonna get some listening done. We're going to do some talking. Awesome. Because our governor here, our no active governor, the minute he heard that the EPA might actually start doing its job, I don't know that he took a horse's head with him to put in Obama's bed, but he scurried off to Washington, said he'd already planned to fly up there on the state's nickel in the state's jet, but he thought he'd just stop by and have a chat with people and make sure that they understood that they didn't want to be messing with our coal. You know, messing. Because, you know, I'd hate to see anything happen. I mean, you know how it is with a mob.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah. I mean, but... You
know, I'd hate to see anything happen to your kids.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, that's filthy.
Yeah, it is, but that's what he did.
Yeah. Yeah, they're criminals.
Our pro-life governor, who can't seem to get a handle on the idea that... having blasting on top of old 40-year-old dormant coal mines might pose a risk to school children that are directly in the path of any, toxic event. But he's pro-life.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Pro his life.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Pro him to have a gold toilet and, you know, I don't even know. I can't really wrap my mind around what drives these people. I mean, other than the fundamental, obvious, you know, root little centerpieces of their greedy world, I don't know what the hell drives them. Like, what? I don't know. Maybe it's just because I see a world where we don't need the kinds of things that they do, and I don't comprehend how. Maybe it's just how part of it. You know, once you see one side, you can't see the other. But I don't understand. What the hell are they playing for? For Jesus? For Jesus? For God? What the hell? Like, when you start using that as God lets me do it, or God lets me. I mean, if you don't see that...
This world will not end in a flood. Did that phrase just drive you, because you heard him say it twice, did that make you just a little bit crazy?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's totally.
Because the world has ended several times for thousands of people in a flood. Most recently, I think back to the tsunami in Southeast Asia around Christmas time a couple or 4 years back. Because everybody, see, and this is a really, I suppose, fine-pointed philosophical observation, but every time someone dies, the world ends for them. I mean, even the fundamentalists will admit that if you push them on it. Yes, this and that. No, they're going to the New Jerusalem. Okay, but this world's over for them. It ended, right? Well, you know, because it's that whole if the tree falls in the forest and there's no one, to, you know what I mean.
Yes, sir.
The world ends every day by flood. Somebody somewhere gets drowned. The world ends every day, Albert, by fire. Somebody somewhere gets burned up. The world ends every day by infectious disease because somebody dies of an untreated illness. I mean,
they want to hold on to the, you know, Stone Age myths of that were probably explaining events quite differently than what their modern interpretation is of it, you know, in terms of literal flood of the entire planet. Where the hell did the water go?
Well, where'd it go? There's that, but, I mean, the other side of it, and I hate to bring this up, but the implication, see, they're taking something from, They're taking something from the argument about global climate crisis and the fact that the sea levels are going to rise and maybe inundate, oh, I don't know, Miami, Boston, New Orleans, New York, come up the Potomac, get Washington, D.C. real wet. And they're extrapolating from that, well, you know, them climate worshippers are saying that the whole world's going to go by flood again. God done said he wasn't going to flood the world. No, we're not going to say that. They're not saying the whole world's going to flood. That humanity's going to die from a great flood. That's, you know, Albert, isn't that setting up a straw man?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, it's the same thing with their CO2. Oh, well, the plants use it. Just like they use water. Okay. I mean, it's an intellectual dead end. Because they set up these bullcrap straw men. And then, you know, obviously it's not going to happen just like it never has happened. Unless, of course, the world was a lot smaller and some kind of event, you know, fused all this hydrogen and oxygen up in the our atmosphere and flooded it all down in rain and then the world expands. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how you could sit there and try to, where did the water go? Where does this stuff happen? How can you sit here and phrase these things like that? Oh, because you know that your followers are dumb. Oh, they come with you.
No, but not just that. See, some of your literalists out there really try to do science around it. I was exposed to this back when I was a young and impressionable Southern Baptist.
Mm.
And they'll explain to you that back once upon a time, before Noah, there weren't no rain. And all the water was collected in the atmosphere.
Mm.
And there was a little bit of dew now and then, but there wasn't no rain or snow. They'd never seed rain. And then man got so sinful that the only one God could save was the ones whose daughters would go on and get him liquored up and get it on with him. And he was the righteous man. And God saved tsetse flies and malaria mosquitoes and yeller fever mosquitoes and
future punishment.
Hallucinogen bearing toads.
Mm.
Maggots and those little nasty earwigs and saved them all.
And then parasites that David was talking about.
Yeah, the one that right.
Replaces the tongue. Yes. Yeah. Oh, I've seen those pictures. That's a crazy little thing.
And then, you know, I, honest to God, I think some of this theology is made out of cute. It comes from cute little songs, just like the believing business comes from the final act of Peter Pan. Just believe, clap that you believe in Tinkerbell. Oh yes, Tinkerbell will live. Well, you know, this flood business, is made up, and I wish I had it handy. What was the name of the Irish Rovers, I think, was the name of the group. And they sang this tune called the Unicorn Song that's got these perplexed, playful unicorns who refuse to come to the ark when they're called. And then they look up and they feel the rain for the first time and they whinny a little bit and they go to the highest rock and then all the unicorns drown because the stupid unicorns wouldn't go on the ark with the tsetse flies and the hallucinogen-bearing the frogs and the poison dart frogs and the malaria mosquitoes. And right.
Yeah. That's why we don't have unicorns or dragons.
Dragons, too? Well, yeah, dragons. Well, see, the floods hit them and their fires went out and then they were able to be predatored on. See how it works?
That fits the puzzle for me. I'm saved. I'm saved. My goodness gracious, they just don't stop. Well, it's up to us, Bob. It's up to you, me, and everyone here. And
oh, and of course, Cossack in the chat room remembers the lyrics. you know, if we ever get to, like, Fahrenheit 451 time, Cossack will be the guy who and they burn all the song lyrics. He'll be remembering it. Yeah, because there was green alligators and long-necked geese, umpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees, some bats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. You heard that one, haven't you?
I'm getting old. There
was green alligators and long-necked geese, some umpty-backed camels and some chimpanzees. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember they did it once on Lawrence Welk. That was during Lawrence Welk's rock and roll phase.
Oh, yeah. Hot stuff.
And play it again, the boys. And to really make it a swing.
Well, I hope we evolve out of this crap. That's all I
can say. But that's the thing. You know, we're up against it because we're dealing with a prophecy here. And I generally don't go in for prophecies. Thanks to Eugene Finnerman, I know that the date for the Mayan prophecy has already passed because of the calendar being the calendar. So that's already gone by, and you know, sorry, nothing. We are dealing with a real prophecy, and that is the prophecy that exists at the front of our patron film. That once humankind loses all of its predators, that evolution no longer favors the smarter.
Idiocracy.
Yeah. Really, yeah, big ass fry.
With more molecules. Honestly, though, when we're sitting here looking at this, I mean, and this is why I brought up what Newt Gingrich said. Is just because it's such a little mobile of the macro. You know, they're done. If the best things that they can come up with are drug test everyone and raise the earth and pave it, you know, and we'll make replicants to go out into space and do these kinds of things, they're done. I mean, they have no imagination. They don't even have common sense. And because of this, because they have no common sense, they're not going to win the minds of the common man. I mean, it's fundamental. It's the fundamental nature of things. You know, like even you talk in regards to the drug crisis or war, or whatever you want to talk of it. Well, not every Republican supports that. There's a whole lot of them that just simply don't. Why? Well, because there's a whole lot of Republicans that are certainly selfish and partake, and they don't want to be prosecuted either.
They just don't want to be seen by anybody doing it.
Well, that's why they...
It's kind of like being a log cabin Republican. You know, same story. Oh, no, I get it. There are shifting attitudes. How bad is it when the person who calls out Piyush Jindal has to be a Repiglican herself, Albert? I offer you the honorable senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, not exactly a hardcore bleeding heart liberal.
Today I'm rising to talk about an issue that has captivated my residents, my constituents up in the state of Alaska.
Hers.
We've got a mountain that is erupting. Mount Redoubt which is located about 150 miles southwest of Anchorage, our largest community, has been more than active in the past week or so, and generating a great deal of press, a great deal of interest, and a considerable amount of impact in my state. So I wanted to take just a few minutes this afternoon to talk about what is happening up north, talk a little bit about the importance of volcano monitoring. I think we're all aware that there have been some recent comments made about federal spending for volcano monitoring and the suggestion that perhaps this might be wasteful money, that we don't have any need to be monitoring volcanoes. And I can assure you, Mr. President, that monitoring volcanoes is critically important to the nation, to the world, and particularly to Alaska right now, where, as I say, we are being held hostage by a volcano.
See, there's only one problem with that, Albert. If she had any inkling of honesty at all, somewhere along the way she would have to say, I'm a member of the Republican Party. My party, the Republican Party, has been hijacked by a bunch of knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing fundamentalist freaks. And see, the freaks think that volcano monitoring is a stupid waste of money.
Well,
I invite them all to come live at the foot of my volcano, and we will turn the monitoring off.
Well, all right. The thing is, though, is nothing creates a liberal faster than having a real-life experience. You know, back in the day when Rush Limbaugh said how one volcano would do more CO2 into the atmosphere than what man does, you know, like right off the bat, that should show you, well, heck, we shouldn't really be adding any more to the mix if by the stroke of God's farts or something, a volcano goes off and adds to what we've already added, makes the situation that much more drastic, right? Well, it's the same thing when you see, you know, police chief of Seattle and this guy coming out and saying, no, we should have all drugs legalized. This guy used to go around arresting people for, you know, fighting the drug war. And when you talk to him, you know, not apparently exactly him, but there's a lot of people that change their minds, that sit there and they see the reality of a situation and say, wow, wait a minute. Wait. I was standing on that side of crazy. Holy cow. The volcano's going off 19 times in a week. You know, it's very, you know, I mean, come on. You know, it takes, sometimes that's what I mean. It takes these events to wake people up. Man, maybe this lady will, I can't even say it. I was going to say restore dignity, but I can't mix that.
We're too far out. Just restoring not being a laughingstock.
Yeah.
Is probably a bridge too far for most Repiglicans. But, you know, okay. I'm so glad you mentioned that the Flush was out there. My friends, one volcano erupting emits more CO2 than all of humankind. Well, here's our chance. Let's measure it. Let's measure it, and then let's the bludgeon Flush Flemball with his own hypothesis. You know, because all this, you know, parts per million, stuff like that, did it ever occur to this upper class twit that quite possibly the dinosaurs couldn't breathe the atmosphere at 4,000 parts per million either? And that's why, you know, Fred isn't working on the back of a brontosaurus down to Mr. Slate's quarry anymore? Just saying.
Seriously. No, yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it that's why you don't let children handle firearms. You know, you got to set the rule, and they seem to act like that. So, I mean, you know, you got to set the rules straight up, right off the bat. Maybe even put a lock on them and hide the key. Because sometimes, you know, like two, you know, the whole, you know, it's like that whole thing. What I keep seeing in my mind is the scene from Last Temptation of Christ when you know, Willem Dafoe has his little Sermon on the Mount, and he's talking about how the rich and the poor and this and this and that, and everyone goes running off saying, kill the rich. And he's like, no. You know, and the thing is these people are only partially armed, and that's more dangerous than actually being fully armed. You know, they're only partially armed. They'll sit there and they cherry pick this and this and that without looking at the entire, in the totality of what they're talking about. You know, and that's, you know, people on the left do it constantly. I've probably done it myself. Everybody's guilty to one degree or another. But when it comes down to the fundamental core beliefs of them, of these people, is they're all partially armed. That's all I can really say about it. You know, any issue, no matter which you look, no matter which issue it is, I'd love to see an issue where they're fully armed. I would love to see an issue where they have all the facts, they have it laid out, A, B, C, D, and E, and that equals X, and to see something like that. But well, I'd like to see dragons and unicorns too, but you know. You only have to settle for the what you see at the truck monster truck shows and the the gluons at the zoo at the circus. I mean, because it's just where we're at, you know. But that's just reality. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I know.
All right, brother. You have a safe trip tomorrow. And,
all right, going to try, and we will talk soon.
Absolutely. Do some cranium cracking.
Ever so gently.
All right, brother.
Later, Albert. Bye now. The Sage of Wisconsin, our buddy Albert. It is time to take a little break. It's the top of the hour. We have reached a minute past 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You know the phone number, right? You do. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's liberal voice.
Long time ago when the earth was green, and there was more kinds of animals than you'd ever seen. They'd run around free when the earth was being born, but the loveliest of them all was the unicorn. There was green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees. Some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, the loveliest of all was the unicorn. Now God seen some sinning, and it gave him pain. And he says, stand back, I'm going to make it rain. He says, hey, brother Noah, I'll tell you what to do. Build me a floating zoo. And take some of them green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget my unicorn. Old Noah was there to answer the call. He finished up making the ark just as the rain started falling. He marched in the animals two by two, and he called out as they went through, hey Lord, I got you green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but Lord, I'm so forlorn, I just can't see no unicorn. Then Noah looked out through the driving rain. Them unicorns were hiding, playing silly games, kicking and splashing while the rain was pouring. Oh, them silly unicorns. Those green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees. Noah cried, close the door, 'cause the rain is pouring. And we just can't wait for no unicorn. The ark started moving, it drifted with the tide. Then unicorns looked up from the rocks and they cried. And the waters came down and sort of floated them away. And that's why you never seen a unicorn to this very day. you'll see
green alligators and long-necked geese, some humpty backcomers and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, you're never gonna see no unicorn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven minutes past the hour. Oh, I think John Fox and I could do a tremendous parody of that thing we just played. I'm thinking that there was that line about, and God said to Noah, get your hands off your daughters! You know, because if you read the rest of it, there's all kinds of nasty, you know, kind of stuff that, the kind of stuff that porn stars would be embarrassed to be associated with in the Bible. But never mind. But there's because Albert brought up, Flush Flemball, I have to share this with you. You know, it was our buddy Tosh who coined what I later misinterpreted to be the phrase anarcho-randianists. And really they are. And so today's ditto heads with their scraped knuckles where they walk on them and their dried out mouths where they breathe through them were treated to an analysis of the late, great Ayn Rand by their almighty God, Flush Flemball. And I feel positively compelled to share this little piece, this little nugget, this little peanut in the with you. That is Rush Limbaugh.
Quotes from Ayn Rand on this. It only stands to reason that where there's sacrifice, there's someone collecting the sacrificial offerings. Where there's service, there's somebody being served. The man who speaks to you of sacrifice is speaking of slaves and masters and intends to be the master.
Well, let's take a run at that. The man who speaks to you of sacrifice is speaking of slaves and masters and intends to be the master. here in Appalachia and in many other parts of the country, places where poor people live are routinely where the awfulest, most devastating nightmares are perpetrated in the name of profit. And if you try to sue, you'll get some pasty-faced judge, like those creeps in on the Fourth Circuit in Richmond, who will say, well, you know, we all have to do some sacrificing. And America needs energy. And coal is our most abundant energy resource. And therefore, Appalachia must be sacrificed in order for me to be able to walk out of my house in the morning and leave 5 televisions running and have 4 refrigerators, 2 freezers, and 6 computers all going at once with all the lights on in my house because I'm better than you are because I sit on the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. It is necessary that people in Appalachia learn to sacrifice for the greater good of the United States of America. Because that's, for all intents and purposes, what they keep saying in the Fourth Circuit. And corporate America. Do you think for a minute that Don Blankenship doesn't know what he is doing to Appalachia? He has boasted that he would like to blow up every mountain in West Virginia. Kind of makes you wonder if Senator J-Rock heard about that and how he'd feel about having his precious Pocahontas County mountains blown up so Donnie could get him a little more coal. But never mind. So apply that to Ayn Rand. The man who speaks to you of sacrifice is speaking of slaves and masters and intends to be the master. Well, what does that make Appalachian people? What does that make Southern people who have to live next to the vile hog-killing plants where the hog feces are kept in giant lakes, and you can smell the place 10 miles before you get to it? What does that make the people who have to deal with that? Because you know what? It's no well-heeled, well-to-do people who have to live near it. Just people who can't get away from it. And people who may have been on the land for 9 or 10 or 12 generations and have every bit as much or more right to be there than corporate America does. It's the toxic zones of Love Canal. It's the toxified soil of industrial America throughout the so-called Rust Belt, a phrase that I despise. It's the toxic Colorado Rockies near military installations where every toxin known to mankind and some that are still top secret have been allowed to leach into the soil and sicken people. And kill people. It's that W.R. Grace and Company site of the asbestos mine in Montana, where the entire town is sick because of the insatiable search for holy profit. That's what it is. The man who speaks to you of sacrifice is speaking of slaves and masters and intends to be the master, which leaves poor folks all over this country who are living near or in toxic disaster areas as the slaves. Kind of makes sense when you look at it that way, doesn't it? But of course, this is Flush Flimball, and that ain't what he meant.
That is President Obama.
Oh!
Where there's sacrifice, there's somebody collecting the sacrificial offerings. What does it mean? President Obama says we all need to sacrifice for whatever reason, this reason or that reason. What it means is we need to pay more. We need to have less affluent lives.
Did he say affluent or effluent? I couldn't quite tell. You know, over the years, Flush Flimball has become rather a sloppy broadcaster. Slurs on the air and clears his throat without... My friends, I had a long oyster. You know, that kind of thing. How hard is it? Back when Agnes used to produce the program, I had a little box, and when I felt a sneeze or something coming on, rather than subjecting you to it, all I had to do, and it works with feet or hands, is just press the little button down, and my microphone went silent, and I went, just like I did right now by pulling the slide down here where I produce myself, and you didn't have to be subjected to it. But God Almighty Flush Flemball now, he doesn't have to worry. He wants you to hear those phlegm balls. Because those are special conservative phlegm balls. You know, he's not even, he's thrown any pretense of professionalism right out the window. Affluent or effluent? I think where Flush is concerned, it's probably effluent. But what he means by he wants us to pay more taxes is he wants me to pay more taxes. Because, of course, anybody with a half a brain understands that, you know, if you're busting your hump and you're making all of $10,000 a year, you ain't going to pay no more taxes. You're going to pay less. It's already showing up in paychecks. If you work for a living and you make anything less than $250,000 a year, you're paying less. But this is one of those moments of the ubiquitous us that Flush Flemball is so adroit at. Can you imagine being a ditto head, a ditto freak, with your little scraped knuckles and your little dry breathing mouth?
That's right, Rush. He's going to tax us. You there making $40 million a year and me here making $9,000. You're going to tax us, Rush.
We need to dial down our prosperity. And we need to give the money to him, not a charity. He is going to eliminate, for all intents and purposes, the tax deductibility. It's going to be 28 cents for every dollar. Charitable donations. He wants to be.
What was it before, Flush? See, now what you got right there is called a sin of omission. Because since right-wingers and ditto monkeys and the little ignorant conservatives are so really not the sharpest knives in the drawer. He has just left the impression that before Obama, every dollar donated, every charitably given dollar was a dollar deducted from one's taxes, which is, of course, say it with me, brothers and sisters, 1, 2, 3, a lie. All tax-deductible donations have always been only partially deductible. President Obama has proposed reducing that tax deductibility. But it will still provide a very nice little cushion for people who need tax cushions. And, of course, you only get the tax deductions after you have given so much money. As an aside, that's why we've never done 501c3 here at the Horn. One, you would have to give horse-gagging loads of money. And I'm not talking relatively. I mean, you know, in thousands upon thousands upon thousands for it to really do you any good. And two, try as I might, I can't bring myself to be a scofflaw where that's concerned. And by that I mean 501c3 says that thou shalt not politic if thou art a 501c3. Well, we talk a lot of politics here. Talk a lot of other fun stuff too, but we talk a lot of politics. And at least in my mind, that would make me have to shut up. Now, we might look at a couple of other formats, but I'm not going to run out and spit on the law the way right-wingers do. Do you realize that the Savage Wiener, Michael the Savage Wiener, set up a 501c3 that he had the nerve to call the Paul Revere Society so that he could this guy, who's a millionaire, was taking tax-deductible donations, He got busted by the IRS for it, by the way. Yeah, he wants us to pay more. He wants us to have less stuff. You know, this is something that's called self-dealing. What Flush Flimball is doing is sweating his Gulfstream. Because he might actually have to pay some taxes. Because heretofore, he really hasn't very much.
The distributor of the charitable donations. He wants to be the distributor of the good.
Yeah, so you get the idea. Make it up as you go along. And tell the simple ones that you're their buddy.
That Rush, he's right. He's right.
Email rolled in from our pal News Ninja Susan out in the Great Northwest with regard to Flush's comment about volcanoes and carbon dioxide. She says, here's a quote from the Seattle Times from December the 1st, 2004. Quote, since Mount St. Helens started erupting in early October, it has been pumping out between 50 and 250 tons a day of sulfur dioxide, the lung-stinging gas that causes acid rain and contributes to haze. Shoot. There's more crap comes out of a single coal-fired power plant. You get the idea. But never mind science. After all, we started out with Representative Shimkus. And Representative Shimkus acknowledged that this was not a science debate. It was, for him, a theological debate. See, we were so happy because we thought science was back alive. But there's always somebody out there trying to kill it. And of that, we must be constantly on our guard. So, you know, take it with... I know you guys don't listen to Flush. But it's good for you to hear a little bit of it once in a while. Just to know what the evil bastards are babbling about. And then, of course, there's this neo-maxi zoom dweeby. And it's really one of those things you've got to hear. To believe. And it's one of those phony pieces of analysis that is quite stunning. It is, of course, from Fox News. And it's that piece, that gimcrack of pseudoscientific fakery at which the right wing is ever so adept, and that is to take limited events and broadcast them as global trends.
Number two, every time they have a global warming summit or it snows.
Right.
You like that, Coach?
It cracks me up.
Going. I tell you what, hey, I'm walking over here. I don't have a coat. I'm freezing. Hey, there's snow.
Lou Holtz,
thank God, global
wondering.
Warming. That'd really been cold.
Now it's the new ice age. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Wow, my luck.
You know, it's hilarious because when you talk to the scientists, they said you could make the case just as much for global cooling, and then you know that they're that this stuff is just run amok. But I'll tell you what, Carol Brenner in that White
can't.
House.
And Doug, by the way, Nancy Pelosi couldn't make it because of the snow.
New research is heating up the global warming issue once again.
CNN.
Data suggests a split on whether the planet is truly in peril. Our Ines Ferre has a story from New York.
A confusing picture of our world's climate.
So confused.
Three independent research groups found that 2008 was the 9th or 10th warmest year since 1850 when record-keeping began.
Independent research groups.
It also was the coolest year since the turn of the 21st century. New data from the University of Illinois says ice levels are roughly the same as those seen 29 years ago. But after decades of ice melt in the Arctic, that may be of little comfort. The increase is because of the formation of thin ice, which melts easily once the winter is over. Even so, one climatologist skeptical of global warming feels the entire debate is muddled with selective data.
We are too short-sighted, or certainly those who believe in it are not looking at all the big picture, which it needs to include other factors than natural cycles in the ocean and in the sun.
Unicorns! It needs to include unicorns! It's when you hear stuff like that that you realize we're screwed. When you hear Representative Shimkus say that capping CO2 emissions will take away too much plant food from the atmosphere, you realize that, and I'm not trying to be a bummer, every time I go on a little downer trip, I think of poor Reverbo, who comes to the program every evening down there next to the altar of the possum goddess, in a perfectly decent frame of mind, only to have me ruin it for him by pointing out things like the fact that the John Shimkuses of the world may actually have enough power to make sure that humanity does not survive. It's tough. And it's damn sure a little eye-opener, isn't it? Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Got a real quick question for you.
All right.
Now, I realize I'm rather old because I actually had civics lessons in school. And my civics lessons mentioned something called the separation of church and state. Okay, perhaps I'm naive as well as old. But tell me, what the hell is a U.S. representative doing preaching on the floor of the House of Representatives?
You know, there's that whole troubling constitutional thing about there being no religious test for office, but I guess probably more than anywhere else in the United States of America, someone who has won an election to the Congress has more freedom of speech than just about anybody else.
Yeah, it just, the whole thing just makes me completely crazy. Because, let's face it, if you say, run for office and they ask you what religion you are, and you say, I'm not going to answer that because it's against the Constitution, you just lost the election right there.
He doesn't love Jesus enough to stand up for Jesus.
Yeah.
He may be an atheist.
Whether you're an atheist, a Christian, a Jew, a Wiccan,
you're not supposed to have to answer that question.
Question, exactly. So why am Yahoo reading from the Bible on the House of in the House of Representatives? I ask plaintively.
I think I'm trying to take the high road here. I think if you have to whip out the Bible in Congress,
you've already lost.
Now, I got some Bible whipping to do later in the program because I won't be here tomorrow night, but I'm doing it for a very good reason. I'm doing it to refute a biblically based argument.
Yeah, this guy is preaching Genesis.
But understand, and you'll understand even better, Susan. And I'm not being condescending. You'll understand even better when I whoop out the Bible here. That the climate thugs, these people who actually want to see if we can make the ocean boil,
mm-hmm.
They know they've lost because they are going out there and pimping what they call God's holy word for their profit motive. I guarantee you, you are going to turn green at the gills when I bring this one out. I promise.
Tell Donald today to warn Donald not to react to a scream of rage.
You might want to do that because this is rage, and we spell it RAYGEE for an extra dose of that raging.
Dear.
Yes.
Mikey, where are you when we need you?
Yeah, this is a real purple faced moment. I promise.
Oh well, in that case, I will get off and let you let her rip. I can scream at me.
Yeah, get it over with, and then I'll try to find something funny to talk about. Okay.
Yeah, because if I cut loose with a streak, I don't want to blow your speakers.
Well, I don't want you to send Donald off to the hospital either. He did. So just, I don't know, just bite your knuckle or bury your face in a pillow or, you know, but don't, yeah.
But my main thing is this whole thing with the religion thing in the government is, it's against the Constitution. Of course, then again, these creepers, they don't care about the Constitution.
Well, there is that now, isn't there?
What am I going on about? Now, what am I going on about? I know they don't care about the Constitution. They peed all over it.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Speaking of that, just before you go into the rage thing, a guy in Portland tried to pay a $200 parking ticket with coins that he had peed on. He didn't break any laws, but they sent it back to him because you could only pay $10 the rest of it. If I were, no, I'm not.
Oh, really? They don't want the paper money. I promise. They don't want the paper money.
Yeah, trust them. They don't want some paper money. But it's not.
Coins dry.
It's not illegal to send it through the mail as long as it doesn't leak or anything. And apparently he made sure. And they couldn't touch him.
And then they were so stupid as to tell him he had to pay it in paper. Man.
Yeah, really dumb.
There are people for who the learning curve is almost vertical.
Yep. Anyway, I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
Don't give me any ideas.
Okay.
May have to start paying my power bill that way.
Oh, hey, you and me both. I got $100 bill last month.
Yeah, we won't talk about what it is here, but yeah, it's
yeah. Okay. Anyway, you have a nice trip.
I'm going to try, and thanks for the charts and graphs.
More than welcome.
Take care, Susan.
Google is a wonderful thing.
Yes, it is.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Columbia City, Oregon. Yeah, I wanted to make sure that I got to this before I hit the road, because it does more properly belong at prayer meeting. And with that being the case, let's do give a you heard this last night, but I can never play it too much. Let's do have a nice little prayer meeting opening. Is that okay?
Talking about. Jesus. I can't hear you. Jesus. I still can't hear you. Jesus Christ our Lord. Do you know his name? Have you seen his glory? Have you felt the warming comfort of his precious love? Praise Jesus. You praise his holy name. Praise his blessed spirit. Praise his everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now.
Exactly. Listen to me now. This comes from Cole Carbonistas in Kentucky. And the reason I said that Susan would scream twice is, and you all may as well. Most of you are familiar with the speeches of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He, being a minister, quite frequently took solace in and made reference to the words in the Bible. And one of the most famous passages of the Bible which he quoted came from the 40th chapter of Isaiah. In which he talked about that day when equality would come, that day when there would be full civil rights, that day when we would stand together as humanity and judge a man by the content of his character and not the color of his skin. And in the course of that, he quoted from Isaiah chapter 40. Prepare in the wilderness a way for God. Make a straight highway for our God across the desert. Let every valley be filled in, every mountain and hill be laid low. Let every cliff become a plain and the ridges a valley. And then the glory of God shall be revealed, and all mankind shall see it, for the mouth of God has spoken. You probably know where this is going. Recently, I believe it was the Kentucky Coal Association, who said, some churches have been getting involved in the mountain removal debate, or what they call the debate over mountaintop mining. And far be it from us to criticize them, but if they want to quote scripture, then we would direct their attention to Isaiah chapter 40 and verses 4 and 5. Let every valley be filled in, every mountain and hill be laid low. Let every cliff become a plain and the ridges a valley. Then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all mankind shall see it. I kid you not. The thugs who, as our masters, ask us to sacrifice our homes, our lives, indeed our sacred honor, have now taken to quoting what is supposedly holy scripture as justification for some of the most horrific, destructive, toxic, poisonous activity on planet Earth. Mountain removal. They, in fact, mock what Representative Shimkus, who says there's no such thing as global warming, says is the infallible word of God. Let every valley be filled in, every mountain and hill be laid low, let every cliff become a plain and the ridges a valley. Then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all mankind shall see it. Of course, that's the problem with quoting the Bible. You can make it say anything you want to say. You can make Noah a noble man, even though rather ignoble things took place after the ark found solid ground. All you have to do is take the text out of context. And that's what happens here. Chapter 40 of the book of Isaiah begins the book of the consolation of Israel. It is the calling, chapter 40, is the calling of the prophet. Console my people. Console them, says your God. Speak to the heart of Jerusalem and call to her that her time of service is ended, that her sin is atoned for, that she has received from the hand of God double punishment for all her crimes. A voice cries, prepare in the wilderness a way for God. Make a straight highway for our God across the desert. Let every valley be filled in, every mountain and hill be laid low. Let every cliff become a plain and the ridges a valley. Then the glory of the Lord shall be revealed, and all mankind shall see it, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. At that point in time, if I understand correctly, the children of Israel had been in the bondage of Babylon for a very, very long time. And it was then when, according to this book, God sent the Persian king, Cyrus the Great, who liberated the Israelites from their Babylonian bondage. And it was so unfathomable to contemplate that it corresponded with every impossible thing this simple and technologically challenged people could imagine. It corresponded with mountains not being mountains anymore. It corresponded with valleys being filled in where filling in valleys was frankly impossible by the most technologically advanced civilization on the planet. It corresponded with cliffs, precipices, if you will, becoming level plain. And in entire geographies turned upside down, where ridges became valleys. The world was about to change in ways as dramatic as these people could express. And that was the manner in which it was expressed. But the people who destroy one of the most biodiverse regions on the North American continent want to read it as a tacit approval of dynamite, of toxins, of poisons, of disease and madness, terror and despair. A verse that speaks to freedom from bondage and joy unbounded is perverted and whored out in the name of the search not for a holy prophet or the calling of the prophet, but the search for the prophet prophet. So there you have a bunch of mountains that aren't there anymore. The valleys are filled in. The world's upside down. The ridges are valleys. The valleys are ridges. And everything's been laid flat and made plain. And the Kentucky Coal Association couldn't be bothered to read on. Because it doesn't take very long before you get to verse 9. And this. Go up on, of the same chapter no less. go up on a high mountain, joyful messenger to Zion. Shout with a loud voice, joyful messenger to Jerusalem. Shout without fear to the towns of Judah. Here is your God. Well, where's here? Well, here is on a high mountain. You know, every time the children of Israel were running across God, they'd be wandering across some God-forsaken place, and lo and behold, he's up on a mountain. Wasn't hanging out in the swamp. Wasn't over in the wadi. He's up on a mountain. Go up on a high mountain. Shout with a loud voice. Well, it's kind of got hard to go up on a mountain and shout with a high voice. High mountain, loud voice. When there's no mountain there to shout from, now isn't it? But never mind that. We'll just ignore that, because it doesn't fit in with the grand scheme of God said blow up the mountains. In a little creationist moment, in verse 12, a question is asked. Who was it measured the water of the sea in the hollow of his hand and calculated the dimensions of the heavens, gauged the whole earth to the bushel, weighed the mountains in scales, the hills in a balance? And Don Blankenship answers and said, that'd be me. Them mountains got coal in it that's $100 a ton, and I'm rich. I'm the one who weighed the mountains in scales and the hills in a balance. And I find it to be good. Of course, you gotta destroy them before you can weigh them. Verse 18, to whom could you liken God? What image could you contrive of him? And Don Blankenship says, that's me again! I'm your boy! Verse 21, did you not know? Had you not heard? Was it not told you from the beginning? Have you not understood how the earth was founded? He lives above the circle of the earth. Its inhabitants look like grasshoppers. That's right, me again. That's me, Don Blankenship. Everybody's just a bunch of damn insects as far as I'm concerned. When it comes to me and my money. Verse 25, to whom could you liken me, and who could be my equal? Me again, Don Blankenship, weigher of mountains, balancer of hills. Lift your eyes and look. Who made these stars, if not he who drills them like a... Drilling! We drill big old holes in the ground and fill it with ammonium nitrate. And diesel fuel, and we put a little charge to them, and the mountains blow plumb up. I'm just like God. Saith Don Blankenship. I couldn't let that go by. Just couldn't let that go by. I don't buy into the literalism of it, but I am a sucker for some fine poetry. And there is some fine poetry in there. They may be actually thought that the value of pi was 3. I mean, it says so in the book, second book of Kings, I think. May have been absolutely dumbstruck by a wheelbarrow. May not have known why it rained. But they had enough common sense to look at the mountains and the high places and realize that there was something terribly, terribly special about them. I mean, when the psalmist says, I shall lift up my eyes unto the hills, that's what he says. He doesn't say, I shall cast my gaze down into the valley of the Dead Sea. Kind of depressing. Mountains are uplifting places. Uplifting places indeed. So I had to share that with you. Hope you'll pardon the little preemptive prayer meeting there. But it's awfully hard to ignore things like that when, because I read that last weekend, and it just made me feel all sick in my belly to see things that Dr. King had cited as celebratory of a day of freedom, laid low, laid waste by people who have, if they believe in creation, no more regard for it than a dog does his vomit. Just a little bit tough to swallow, if you know what I mean. So, look. This is it for conversation until Friday at the very earliest. We've got about an hour remaining. Use them well. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is Activist Radio. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Well, I hear a great singing in these hills, in the night, the droning of his drills, with a hooty owl and a whippoorwill, like a nightjar without wings. I'm looking around me, it's so sad, the ravenous American dream gone mad. But one guitar was all I had, just one song to sing, and I would sing a song. For the mother of us all, for are we all not brothers on this blue green spinning ball? You know that mother loves you, lift your hands and your voices too. Let's sing a song for mother, it's the least that we can do. Back is broken for its foes. Catch your rivers in for gold with a crapshooter's laissez-faire. But what about our future sons and daughters, blood kin everyone? After mothers turned and gone, because nobody cares. Don't you turn your back on your mother, don't you look the other way. For everything that's broken, you know someone has to pay. You know that mother loves you, do what loving children do. Try and help save your mother before her days are through.
don't forget your family and your family that is yet to be. There's plenty here for everyone, but not enough for greed. There's nothing new beneath the sun, only something's gone away. For everything her children won, why make mother pay? So let's give a gift to mother, so she'll know we really are the loving sons and daughters that she always knew we were. You know that mother loves you, and now it's time to show the love you hold for your mother before her time goes. Before it's time to go. Before it's time to go.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. All the malarkey about the magic of the marketplace has dissolved in thin air as first the Bush administration and now the Obama administration has bailed out the biggest banks in the country and GM and Chrysler too. Without this support, the banks would be bankrupt, as would GM and Chrysler, and the economy would have gone over the cliff and landed with a bigger thud than it has already. So let's be clear. The logic peddled by Reagan Republicans and libertarians and big business people from the beginning of time that government should just get out of the way and let companies alone and everything would be hunky-dory has been proven utterly and disastrously false. Left to its own devices, capitalism would crash and burn in a fire of its own making. But as soon as government smells the smoke, it rushes to the rescue, puts the fire out as best it can, does some repairs, and then sets the wild vehicle on its course again. In a bit, the drivers will tell us once again that they don't need the government and that everything is best left to the market. But when we hear that next time, we should remember not only how false it is, but how dangerous. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yeah, once again, just a reminder that there will be no live shows of mine tomorrow or Thursday. I do hope to be back on the air on Friday. I hope you'll be with me. We'll have plenty to talk about, I'm sure. This is looking to be quite the interesting little meeting. We are going to have a little chat with President Obama's Council on Environmental Quality. I hope we can eloquently make our case. I so hope we can. But that's not all there is to talk about, not by any stretch of the imagination. There is, of course, whatever's on your mind this evening. We've got 55 minutes or so of conversation remaining. 877-443-2366 being the number, or locally 304-658-3333 if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan, or you're within reach of a local call. It's not entirely impossible. So, yeah, those are your methods. If you want to, email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com, and you're welcome to participate that way as well. If you've never been the Head On Radio Network chat room, there's no better time than the present for jumping right in there. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chatroom. And we are continuing to people who actually know what they're doing, namely, among others, John Fox, Sue, Ben Birch, Lottie, are all working away at the chat room to make to clear out some bugs and make it more user-friendly. I would be remiss if I did not note that also at the chat room, or also at the website, headonradionetwork.com, there is, in fact, a PayPal button. It's the last day of March. Bless her heart, my mother would have been 84 today. It's the last day of March. We did not quite make it to our monthly goal, but we got closer. We got closer than we have in a long, long time. And I thank you for your efforts. New month starts tomorrow. Please, no April Fool's jokes. And, you know, Susan has to be careful about whispering things into the ear of the universe. I don't want to receive any. Although there's some little right-winger out there now going, oh, I got an idea. But any way you care to help keep this going is heartily appreciated, I promise. A couple of things out in the wide, wide world that are just kind of hard to stomach. And it's one of those, you know, Jesus, why aren't we prosecuting moments? There was a story out there. I found it over at Truth Out. I go to Truth Out from time to time. They do some significantly good work. And like we knew all along, but of course there's a little bit of, I guess, empirical data to it now. It turns out that really, really, not kidding, torture didn't work. And when I say didn't work, I mean really didn't work. Peter Finn and Joby Warwick in the Washington Post, reprinted at Truth Out, write, when CIA officials subjected their first high-value captive, Abu Zubaydah, to waterboarding and other harsh interrogation methods, they were convinced that they had in their custody an al-Qaeda leader who knew details of operations yet to be unleashed. And they were facing increasing pressure from the White House to get those secrets out of him. This particular iteration of the Washington Post article is accompanied by an ABC News photo of Abu Zubaydah. Doesn't exactly make you want to stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. Peter Finn and Joby Warwick write, the methods succeeded in breaking him, and the stories he told of al-Qaeda terrorism plots sent CIA officers around the globe chasing leads. I think I mentioned that it is the nature of torture that the torturer and the tortured eventually find themselves locked in a macabre dance that is ultimately a race for death. And when you're being drowned, you'll say stuff to make them stop drowning you. When you're being beaten, you'll say anything you think your beaters want to hear, not because you have been persuaded that the truth is a good thing, but because it's obvious what they want to hear. Because if you engage in torture and it's all just open-ended questions, what do you know, what do you know, what do you know, what do you know, it becomes entirely Kafkaesque. I know I hurt. I know I think you're going to drown me. I know that if I didn't want America to something awful to happen to America before, I certainly do now. You know, that kind of thing. But if they are leading questions, which most torture questions are, confess to blaspheming the Holy Mother, you know, Spanish Inquisition stuff. What comes back at you is usually, and common sense tells you this, pure and unmitigated bull, generated by the endorphin rush created by pain, as well as the human facility to try to reason away misery. And thus do Finn and Warwick write, in the end, not a single significant plot was foiled as a result of Abu Zubaydah's tortured confessions. Nearly all of the leads attained through the harsh measures quickly evaporated, while most of the useful information from Abu Zubaydah, in the main names of Al-Qaeda members and associates, they got before they started waterboarding him. Dim Leader described Abu Zubaydah as Al-Qaeda's chief of operations. Other people called him a trusted associate of Osama bin Laden and a major figure in the planning of the September 11, 2001 terrorist attack. There's only one problem with all of it. Of course, that phrase came out of Dim Leader's mouth, so you know what the problem was. It was a lie! And it wasn't one of those shade of meaning lies either. It wasn't one of those depends on what the definition of is lies. If that can even be deemed a lie. No, whereas Dim Leader did in fact describe him in public as Al-Qaeda's chief of operations, it turns out Abu Zubaydah wasn't even a member of Al-Qaeda. Not even of the junior auxiliary. No decoder ring. No certificate suitable for framing. Not a member. What he was the article describes as a fixer. An arranger. And he never even came into contact with Al-Qaeda until well after September the 11th, 2001. He is what he is a Palestinian man. He is one of 241 human beings still held at our concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. His real name is Zayn al-Abidin Muhammad Hussein. Despite all the things said about him by the Bush administration and various and sundry functionaries thereof, he has yet to be charged with a blessed thing. He's 38 years old now. And the best that U.S. legal officials can come up with is conspiracy. There really is a crime of conspiracy, you see. Conspiracy does not always have to be followed by the word theory. A conspiracy, generally speaking, is an agreement between two or more persons to do some illegal act, and at some point just one of any of the people party to the conspiracy takes a substantial step toward the completion of the goal of the conspiracy. You, me, and two or three other folks, we decide we're going to go and, oh, I don't know, steal beer from a beer truck. That sounds like a good idea. Yeah, we'd have a lot of beer. Oh, I think that's great. Guess what? You're all guilty of conspiracy, or at least the attempt, or the planning stages. Then one drunk idiot goes out and gets a bottle opener and heads for the beer truck. You're all guilty of conspiracy. That's what they want to charge this guy with now. This guy that was said to have been involved with every facet of Al-Qaeda operation. And yet still, an anonymous U.S. counterterrorism official says,
it's simply wrong to suggest that Abu Zubaydah wasn't intimately involved with Al-Qaeda. He was one of the terrorist organization's key facilitators. Offered new insights into how the organization operated, provided critical information on senior Al-Qaeda figures, and identified hundreds of Al-Qaeda members. How anyone can minimize that information, some of the best we had at the time on Al-Qaeda, is beyond me. But, of course, the guy saying that doesn't quite get around to mentioning that they had all of that information before they ever tried to fake drown him. Waterboard. You know, one of those practices for which we sent people at the Tokyo war crimes trials flailing their heels in midair. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the ideas were all hatched, among others, by people like John Yoo, Jason Bybee, David Addington, and none other than Douglas Feith. Oh, Douglas Feith. There's a nasty one. But I think he's beginning to itch a little bit now that the news has come out that Spain is actually doing the legal work that our own Justice Department or Congress or some prosecutor in this country somewhere should be doing. And he's nervous. Spanish court considering opening a criminal case against six members of the Dim Leader administration over allegations that they used their legal skills to create an appearance of cover for outright torture, such as was used on Abu Zubaydah, who had already sung all that he had to sing. You know, when you torture somebody after they've already given you everything they've got to give, at that point in time, I don't think you can call it torture anymore. You kind of have to call it sadism, don't you? The infliction of pain for little other than the enjoyment of inflicting pain? I've got that right, don't I? So with the word out that some people are looking into his filthy, inhumane activities, Douglas Feith had to go out and defend himself.
And when you've got to go out and defend yourself and you're a damn war criminal, there's no better place to do it than on Bill O'Reilly.
So, Mr. Feist, you may be tried in absentia, of course. You're not going over to that dog and pony show. And if convicted, which good chance in that place, your travel would be severely restricted around the world.
Well, there are really two big problems that I'd highlight about this. First of all, what I understand about the allegations about me personally, I happen to know, are just backwards, and I'm being criticized for a position that I never advocated, and so the facts are just wrong.
Which one? The stress position? The upside-down position on the damn water board, Douglas Fife? Which position is backward?
But there's also a broader point of principle here, which is what the Spanish authorities are considering doing is indicting people in the former U.S. government officials for giving advice to the president.
No, they are considering indicting your war criminal ass for creating schemes to justify torture of other human beings. See, that's one of the problems that Douglas Fife has. He has a very narrow definition, not only of what constitutes torture, but of what constitutes human being. And of course, before you can ever engage in torture, you have to dehumanize the person you plan to submit to it.
And the idea that a foreign official can disagree with advice given to the president, they're not talking about action.
The very idea that a foreign official could disagree with advice given to the president, especially when that advice was to violate the Constitution of the United States, various and sundry statutes of the United States, various and sundry treaties of the United States, and a whole host and raft of international laws. The very nerve!
And they're not even talking about directing people to take action. They're talking about people who were advising the president
okay,
on
but Mr. Feist,
policy
here's
and legal
big
questions.
Mistake you're making.
So let me see if I've got this straight. If I'm a hotshot White House lawyer and I tell the president that it is because he is the president and because the law does not apply to the president of the United States, if I tell the president to take a submachine gun and go out into the streets of Washington, D.C. and start mowing down tourist groups with it, I have no culpability whatsoever. None. I'm just not... I was only rendering legal advice. Wait a minute. I was only rendering legal advice. I was only following orders. Oopsie! We got laws about that, too. Now, we went through rather a bit of a legal Donnybrook coming up with some legal principles around that broad defense of I was only following orders. I'm not making fun of the German people. But it really was attempted as a defense at Nuremberg. Bless them. The German people have no tolerance for that kind of BS anymore. But for some reason, it still flies here. Only following orders. But there's two. I can't deprive you of absolutely good comedy. You got to hear the holding forth of the great one himself, Falafel Man O'Reilly.
You're actually being rational. You're actually taking this seriously. This isn't serious. This is a kangaroo court set up by a.
No, you right wing freak. The kangaroo court's in Guantanamo Bay. But then again, that's the actual being rational part. Never mind.
terrorist guy who served 8 years in prison. New York Times didn't mention that, but he's the driver. Indicting you and two other guys who have nothing to do with policy in the United States. You guys don't make policy. You could say whatever you want. Look, I could be indicted in Spain for saying that I support waterboarding.
You could be indicted in Spain for trying to sexually assault a woman with a delectable deep-fried Middle Eastern treat. But we'll leave that part alone, Bill.
Me on trial? You're going to send me? That's what's this going on. But if the government of Spain sanctions these nuts, goes through the process, and then convicts you guys, which, believe me, they would, and then you go to...
How would you know, Bill? How would you know? Have you run afoul of the Spanish authorities? Monty Python notwithstanding, this is not one of those no-one-expects-the-Spanish-Inquisition moments. This is actually a real justice process, as opposed to the phony baloney that goes on, among other places, in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And the phony baloney, the slick, grimy, blood-soaked legalism that took place inside the Bush White House. Mr. Feith would be welcome to stand in the dock and defend himself. He would be offered that opportunity. Whereas the American people, aching, yearning for justice, are denied that opportunity for justice against Mr. Feith, against Mr. Bybee, against Mr. Yu, against Mr. Addington, and against Mr. Gonzalez. Now, who's got the kangaroo courts? You and I, sharing our time in this program, are not the only ones who want to see Douglas Feith and that other the other members of that vile cabal of the night tried. There are millions of us. And it is worth remembering those famous words. Justice delayed is, in fact, justice denied. And justice is certainly being delayed at this point in time.
Africa or something, on a safari, and somebody grabs you, you could be in big trouble.
That's the first place O'Reilly thinks of? Going to Africa to blow away animals? That's what he thinks of Douglas Feith? I mean, there's some real... Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, courtesy phone stuff going on here. Bill O'Reilly ad-libbing, well, I mean, what if you went to Africa on a safari? Not what if you went to Paris to the Louvre? What if you went somewhere to kill something?
But this is an effort to intimidate U.S. government officials and to basically get...
No, you lying bastard, because you are not a U.S. government official. This inquiry in Spain has nothing to do with anyone who is an official of the United States government. It has to do with former officials who are outside the administration and for the last 9 years or so have also been outside the law. Outlaws, if you will. See how they lie? See how the right wing lies? Well, they're trying to intimidate government officials. Well, don't you have to be a government official to be intimidated as a government official? Did I miss the memo? Is Douglas Feith still in the government? And if he is, why aren't we marching on Washington?
Get some Spanish magistrate or any magistrate anywhere in the world to be able to exercise a degree of control over U.S. government decision-making.
Well, I think I'm more...
Well, let's see. Let's take a minute there. Let's talk about some of that U.S. government decision-making. War in Iraq. Wow. How many trillions of off-the-book dollars are we out for that? Sure would have been nice if somebody could have exercised a little bit of at least advisory control over U.S. government decision-making there. Because, yeah, I mean, we do agree just about across the board, with the exception of freaks like Bill O'Reilly and Douglas Feith. The Iraq war was ill-advised. Don't we? Credit default swap schemes. Now, I don't know if you caught it, but there's a lot of pissed off people on this planet, and they're mad at us. Sadly, you and I are stand-ins for the people that they can't reach. We're just those Americans who screwed things up again. I mean, my God, when the president of Brazil comes out and says the financial crisis that is plaguing the world was not created by brown people, the financial crisis that is plaguing the world was created by blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white people. How do you defend against that? It was! And then there's the outgoing prime minister of Czechoslovakia. Oh, see how easy it is? I just McCained myself. There's no such thing as Czechoslovakia. There is the Czech Republic and the Slovak Republic. They got divorced after the Cold War. The outgoing prime minister of the Czech Republic. Miroslav lots of consonants or something like that is his name. And last week, he went to an AC/DC concert. And I don't know if the contact buzz from the smoke in the air was a little too much for him. You know, at least this guy was cool enough to go to an AC/DC concert. He wasn't like that little freak canter running off to see the Britney Spears sing "Oops, I Flashed Him Again." Now the guy goes off to an AC/DC concert. Hears him play Hell's Bells and Highway to Hell and all that fun stuff. Comes back, gives a speech, pissed off, and says that the United States has put economically has put the world on the road to hell. Yeah, I mean, how do you defend against that? I mean, the Madoffs and the Alan Stanfords and all those little well-heeled, well-dressed, well-traveled, well-fed, well-paid goobers on Wall Street did. You know, thank God the Czech prime minister wasn't criticizing the Bush administration, or else every damn wing nut in America would be out burning their checkerboards, and we'd all have to be going to the store to buy a six-pack of Freedom Wiser. Jesus! Trying to exercise control over U.S. government officials and policymaking. I gotta say that where all those things are concerned, Afghanistan? You know, the whole world is going, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that. You know, we've still got people in our country who've read history! Well, everybody but Russia. Russia was sitting back going, yeah, I dare you. You should do it. They're punking you. You go, you do. Is good, manly American thing to do. Attack Afghanistan. Trust us. You'll feel much better in the morning. Stupid Amerikanskis. They're going to attack Afghanistan. They will wind up broker than we are. Ha! Really? The world said, don't do it. The world said, you know, on a rack, please, don't do it. Come on. So, you know, I'm thinking this argument isn't Douglas Feith's the best defense should he choose to go and mount one.
angry about it than you are, but I think I'm furious. And the second thing is that, you know, Spain has got to wise up. Right now, Spain's not a friend to the United States. They're not. If you look at every conflict around the world, it's Spain taking the other side. Third largest trading partner of Iran, Spain. That's great. They don't want sanctions against the nukes. No, let Iran have those nukes. This is Spain. I think Spain...
Lying bastard! Just the brazenness of... Well, they don't want sanctions against the... What nukes? Which ones? Oh, the non-existent ones. Okay, all better now.
It's a problem. What do you think?
Well, it certainly is, and I mean, let's remember that the government in Spain changed when there were elections held, and the Al-Qaeda people wanted to influence those elections.
They blew up
that train in Madrid, and it had the effect that they were hoping for, and it got the current government voted in.
Okay.
No, I'm sure you're tired of hearing me holler, you lying bastard, but really. It did not have the effect that they were looking for. The effect that they were looking for was to make Spain get into it more big time. Because, you know, they're Spain, they march around, they got the cross of St. James on them, you know, Santiago. And that symbol is sort of well known in the Middle East among the Muslim peoples. It's still remembered. And it would have been really, really handy to piss off Spain so badly that they would have mounted up and gone riding off to the Iraq. Crosses? They don't need no stinking crosses. That is what they wanted. They wanted Spain to respond to that to the train bombing the exact same way that dumbass in the White House, George Bush, responded to September 11th. But instead, Spain didn't respond that way, and Spain changed their government and got smart, and I'm not talking about talking into your shoe phone, got smart. But just look at how long it takes to go through a simple 3-minute and 57-second clip of Douglas Fife lying his ass off. All this that we've talked about happened in 3 minutes and 57 seconds. And there was no me and nobody else to sit there and call BS on this. And I sit here in a little studio talking about it, and it never reaches the terrified masses, the aging demographics of Fox News. No, what reaches them is crazy old Bill O'Reilly. Or he's practically like some sort of weeping religious icon, Glenn Beck. That's what reaches them. No other ideas. No other concepts. Just fear, 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 and a little more fear. It's really it's a little bit scary. If you stop to ponder it. Because just like what we were saying with Representative Shimkus, these are the people who have the power to make sure that we don't fix that we don't fix the problems that we most assuredly and certainly have. And if we do not fix the problems that we have, we may well be more screwed than anything that we have yet contemplated. This is why America is still a broken America. This is why America is still an America on whom the jury is still out. This is an America that may be terminal. Are you afraid yet? You don't have the terrorists to fear. You have the Douglas Fifes of the world to fear. And perhaps more, you have faceless, nameless, quiet creatures of the Bush administration and the right wing still wandering around inside the government and making mischief. I've got some audio for you here of Seymour Hersh. He appeared on Terry Gross's Fresh Air yesterday. And, it's sort of a, not to say that she offers throwaway questions, but it, when you're talking to Cy Hersh, it's kind of a throwaway question. So, as you continue to dig into what the Bush administration did, are more people coming forward to talk to you now that the president and vice president no longer are in power? Hersh says not many people who have previously said, I'll talk to you later, have talked to him because they are still afraid of Dick Cheney. There's a reason to be afraid of Dick Cheney. With Hersh having said that, Terry Gross says, are you saying that you think Vice President Cheney is still having a chilling effect on people who might otherwise be coming forward? Have a seat, pour something bracing, and have it ready. Because, like I said, something wicked does not this way come. Something wicked has yet remained with us.
Who investigated the Bush administration throughout the Bush administration, always looking for ways that they might have been going beyond executive authority and taking on new powers? And now that the Bush administration is over, you're still investigating what they did and where they might have violated the law. Is investigating that any different for you as a journalist post-Bush administration than it was during the Bush administration? Are more people coming forward now that the president and vice president are no longer in power?
That's a great question because I did think, I had a lot of people that had told me in the last year of Bush, call me next February. And so far, even people that are out are still chary because, not so much Bush, but Cheney really is. He's really smart. In the article this week in the New Yorker that's coming out this week, I mentioned that at one point last fall, Mr. Miliband, the young foreign secretary of Britain, unilaterally, without telling the White House, made a trip to Syria to see the President Assad, and his intelligence chief, his MI6 chief, went before him. And Bush, Cheney didn't know about it until actually was they were actually there. And Cheney at a meeting, and I do have, I can tell you, I do have access, and I have had, and I've been very careful of how I use it, to a lot of stuff from meetings in the White House. And at a meeting, he railed on about perfidious Albion, you know, that the old Shakespeare term for England, and that was used during the Revolutionary War as a pejorative term for England. Perfidious Albion, he said, he is, Cheney is really underestimated. It's easy to make a caricature of him. He's very, very bright. And he's also, in person, much more open-minded in a sense. I'm talking about not politically. You could go and the most disparate people in the world go and have had social evenings with him and his wife, and talking about the current, as long as you don't get into politics, and movies and stuff like that. It's
Hitler loved Mickey Mouse make a character and Charlie Chaplin.
He's much more formidable than people think. Got a rap-clap memory, understands bureaucracy much better, has been around forever, has had every job.
Are you saying that you think Vice President Cheney is still having a chilling effect on people who might otherwise be coming forward and revealing things to you about what happened in the Bush-Cheney administration?
I'll make it worse. I think he's put people left. He's put people back. They call it a stay behind. It's sort of a intelligence term of art. When you leave a country and you've driven out, you've lost the war, you leave people behind. It's a stay behind that you can continue to have contacts with to do sabotage, whatever you want to do. Cheney's left to stay behind. He's got people in a lot of agencies that still tell him what's going on, particularly in defense, obviously, and also in the NSC. There's still people that talk to him. He still knows what's going on. Can he still control policy up to a point? Probably up to a point, a minor point, but he's still there. He's still a presence.
Do you remember, like I remember, and maybe I remember the shows I do because each one is sort of a child of mine, I guess, sent off into cyberspace to find its way in the world. Do you remember when we talked about Monica Goodling? And do you remember when it became obvious that the Bush administration had mounted a serious, nay, a significant effort to hire all manner of weirdos from the Patrick Henry University, named, by the way, after a fictitious university in Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged, I might add, from the Patrick Henry University, from the Pat Robertson School of Law, from the Jerry Falwell School of Law. And the Bush administration even got caught screening applicants so as to wind up with these people as hires. You remember that? I remember that. So when Seymour Hersh says Cheney's left to stay behind, he's got people in a lot of agencies that still tell him what's going on, particularly in defense, obviously, also in the NSA. There's still people that talk to him. I'm not 10 cents worth of surprised. No. Of course they did. You and I, we've talked, we've emailed, we've conversed on the phone, we've chatted in the chat room, and we know that the entire federal government is booby-trapped for Barack Obama. It will become more obvious as the Obama administration really gets its feet under them, because they'll find rugs being pulled out from under those feet at places where they never should have had that happen. And, of course, the Johnny-on-the-spot for-profit media will say, well, clearly the Obama administration is tone-deaf on this issue, Bill. When, in fact, that nasty, vulgar, vile Nixon administration term that was first learned about in the Watergate hearings will have actually been perfected. You know the term, don't you? When all the evidence of all the dirty dealings and all the dirty tricks and the filthy crapulastic conduct began coming out, there was testimony about something that the creep, I'm not talking about Nixon, I'm talking about the committee to re-elect the president, creep, something that they perpetrated through phony letters, phone calls, faked political ploys that caused their opposition to do exactly the opposite from what their opposition had hoped to do. The nastiest of nasty politics. That term was referred to, pardon me, but you know, I couldn't say this on terrestrial radio, but at least I'm free enough I can say it here. That term under the Nixon administration, and it, you know, this is journalism. I mean, this is reporting. This is history. That term was referred to as rat fuck. As in, hey boss, we rat fucked Edmund Muskie today with the Canuck letter. Okay? Or we rat-fucked George McGovern. That vulgar, odious term has been raised to high art. And you're going to see it happen before your very eyes. Why? Because, not to put too fine a point on it, Republicans do not love their country. They do not love the United States. They love what the United States can give them. They love what they can steal from the United States, by hook or literally by crook. It is conduct that is criminal. And it is also something that, because we will not enforce the laws of this nation against the likes of John Yoo or Jason Bibee or David Addington or Douglas Feith or Alberto Gonzalez, because we will not do that, then something like this, something that runs really deep, something this that like this that has roots in the very viscera of our government, we will be utterly unable to do anything about that whatsoever. So just keep your eyes peeled, okay? Just keep your eyes peeled. You know, there's Douglas Feith on O'Reilly's program. And he's, on the one hand, saying, oh, I was just giving advice. I was only following orders. And yet, on the other hand, that monster actually bragged about his activities in the government. Last year, Douglas Feith gave an interview to Philip Sands, a British law professor. And these megalomaniacal sociopaths have no conscience. It's part of the definition of sociopath. Bragged about it. This is from Philip Sands' recollection of the interview, his reporting of the interview. I asked Feith, just to be clear, didn't the administration's approach mean that Geneva's constraints on interrogation couldn't be invoked by anyone at Guantanamo? Now, follow that. I asked Fife, just to be clear, didn't the administration's approach mean that Geneva's constraints on interrogation couldn't be invoked by anyone at Guantanamo? Oh, yeah, sure, he shot back. Was that the intended result, I asked? Absolutely, he replied. I asked again, under the Geneva Conventions, no one at Guantanamo was entitled to any protection? That's the point, Fife reiterated. This year, I was really a player. Thinking back on 2002 and relishing the memory. Sick, 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 sick. And our sickness is contagious. News from Afghanistan. Sorry, I guess we're not going to end on a funny tonight. News from Afghanistan. Via the Independent of the UK. Former UNICAL executive and president of Afghanistan, Hamid Karzai, has put his signature on a new law in that sad, sad place. It is the Shia Family Law. It has within it something called Article 132. Article 132, you know, I see this reported and no one draws this distinction. Article 132 is very similar to that New Testament provision that states, wives, submit to your husbands, and which 10 years or so ago, maybe more, the Southern Baptist Church announced as policy, as doctrine, as dogma, would be its position. Wives, submit to your husbands. Article 132 requires women to obey their husbands' sexual demands. Wow. You remember? Do you remember the story coming out of the West Tennessee? And the woman testifying after she had blown her husband away, shot him in the back with a 12-gauge shotgun, that she couldn't take it no more. He wanted me to wear them hooker shoes and that there wig, that trashy lingerie. I had to kill him. Remember that? Well, Article 132 of the Shia Family Law would negate all of those problems. See, it's a crime control measure in Afghanistan, you see, because women really would have to obey. Remember, love, honor, and obey? You know, we got that obey stuff going in the Western world, too, but we don't talk about it too much when we're criticizing some South Asian nation. Requires women to obey their husband's sexual demands. Whew. You know, it's bad enough over there, but my God, can you imagine if you were... wouldn't David Vitter love to have Article 132 here in the United States? Stipulates that a man can expect... Wow. A man can expect to have sex with his wife at least once every 4 nights when traveling, unless they're ill. They are ill. I assume that means the husband and the wife, not all of the wives. I don't know. Men get preferential inheritance rights. Men get easier access to divorce. Men get priority in court. It also approves child marriage and restricts a woman's right to leave the home. That's a real head scratcher. I thought we bombed Afghanistan back into the Stone Age, because that's what the Taliban was doing. I think I missed a bunch of memos. The United Nations Development Fund for Women, UNIFEM, has stated clearly and unequivocally, and this is a quote, Article 132 legalizes the rape of a wife by her husband. And I thought when Laura Bush went over there that was all taken care of, and they were going to go to school. The little girls were going to go to school and learn and be real human beings, just like boys. Not so much. That dog and pony show, to use a phrase from Bill O'Reilly, has broke camp and left home. And here's the what Mark Twain would call the snapper. You paid for it. Yeah, you. Me. Us. We. Paid for it. We have enabled Hamid Karzai to rush that Shia family law through the Loya Jirga or whatever it is in Afghanistan, because he's got some elections coming in August and he wanted to throw a bone to the fundamentalist tribalists. Oops. And you paid for it. Oh, golly Moses. We paid for it. Somewhere in Afghanistan, there's a guy looking at his wife going, honey, it's day four. You said you had a headache on days one through three. I don't care about the headache today, baby. You're giving it up. The United States paid for our government so they could pass a law that says you got to. Give it up, baby. Uncle Sam says you need to. Thank God we're a Christian nation, huh? So that's it. We're done. Let me up. I've had enough. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, chief musician, web designer, parody performer. Thanks to Guy James for making it back today. Welcome back, Guy. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. And to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, whiterosesociety.org. I will miss you guys these next couple of days. Be back Friday. Please help us keep this all going. Sincerely. Thanks to the bravest, hardest working people I know. Folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and Coal River Wind. .org. You know why I call them that. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Shut up!
president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document which he was sworn to uphold?
I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
And we do have secret prisons. That is not what America's all about.
Let's go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. As you know, the Inside Scoop reports on the news from Washington. But rarely do we report on the news from the District of Columbia. Now, you may think that they're one and the same, and technically you'd be right. Physically, Washington occupies the same space as the District of Columbia. But mentally, they're worlds away. When people speak of Washington, whether within the Beltway or outside the Beltway, people are talking about the federal city, the capital of the United States, the Congress, the White House, the policies of the federal government. But the District of Columbia, which takes the same space as Washington, is kind of a very different place. It's families living in a number of homes, working in their businesses, raising children, trying to have the same life as other Americans, paying taxes, serving in the military, serving on juries. It is the last occupied territory in the United States, America's last colony. These supposedly ordinary people, many of whom are working for the federal government, sacrificing perhaps higher wages elsewhere to serve their government, are denied the same equal rights that every other American has under the law. The people of the District of Columbia are the only people south of Canada and north of Mexico that do not have democratic rights. Why is that? Well, it comes from an obscure provision in the Constitution. The founders wanted to keep the District of Columbia, the seat of government, separate from all of the 50 states. And maybe it made sense in that time when the district was seen as a temporary place for people to go say their votes and then go back to their home states. But it doesn't really make much sense right now. The people of D.C. want a vote. They want a vote in the House of Representatives. They want a vote in the Senate. Worse than the fact that the residents of D.C. don't have a vote in the district, they don't even have control over their own local affairs. The various states can decide what they want locally. Many conservatives, in fact, support states' rights and local control. Not with regard to the District of Columbia. If the people's elected representatives in the district, the mayor and the city council, do something that Congress doesn't like, Congress just overturns it. And they overturn it without even a representative of the district being there. So what's the solution? Statehood? Returning the territory to Maryland? Perhaps it's a new bill promoted by this administration and the Congress to finally give D.C. a vote in the House, if not the Senate. But as always, there's a catch-22. The National Rifle Association has insisted that senators and members of the House include in the bill, giving D.C. a seat in Congress, a voting seat in Congress, a provision to take away the district's authority to regulate guns. It's a tough poison pill to swallow. And it leaves the residents of Districts of Columbia with a catch-22. If they want the same rights as every American, they have to give away even more of their local control. To discuss this issue, I've invited Jaylene Quinto. She is the Communications Director for D.C. Vote. Jaylene, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Thank you for having me.
I want to go through, first of all, the history of how we got in this situation, because this situation is very familiar to all the residents of D.C., but for people in Virginia, Maryland, and certainly for people beyond California, Alaska, they may not realize that the residents of D.C. don't have the same rights as other Americans. Why is that?
Well, you know, there's a historical reason in that Congress kind of punted this issue. They just said, there were a number of members of Congress and a number of historical documents that